Hello, and welcome to the Cultural Property Law Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Dietz. In today's episode, I'm going to discuss the size and scope of the illicit trade in stolen and looted cultural property as it exists today. The illicit trade in stolen and looted cultural property is the third largest black market in the world, behind only drug smuggling and gun running. Some estimates put the trade at approximately $8 billion annually, but the real figure is unknowable because many, if not most, instances of looting and theft go undiscovered or unreported. The reason that the trade is so widespread and lucrative is threefold. First, you have the great demand for antiquities. Second is the fact that most national laws and international conventions that try to combat the trade are fairly weak. And lastly, you have the inability or unwillingness of most countries to actively combat the trade. So the problem is both in the source countries, the countries that have that supply lots of antiquities, and in the market countries, which are the ones that buy most of the illicit antiquities. Neither side is good at enforcing their laws or at even having particularly good laws to combat the trade. In these source countries, the main reason for looting is simply poverty. Looting is most prevalent in the rural areas of developing nations that have little fertile land and high rates of unemployment, because basically there's no other way to make money, and this can be seen as a quick fix often. If a person has no money, can't find a job, can't till the land, then this is often the only way they have to make money. But of course, this wouldn't be profitable if there weren't people willing to buy such looted goods. Even though looters make some money, they're not the ones who make the big buck from the trade. They make enough to live on, and so continue looting, but they don't make enough in one big score to retire from the business, so they'll just keep on looting. They supply the middlemen, and the middlemen are the ones who drive the trade and make the vast majority of the money. It's estimated by some sources that the middlemen keep as much as 98% of the sales price an object gets on the market. And that's the key, that if the looters made enough money from these sales, they wouldn't have to loot anymore. But the middlemen, obviously, don't want to let that happen, because then their supply of looted goods would dry up. Another problem that leads to widespread looting is the fact that most nations that have rich supplies of art and antiquities are developing nations which don't have the money to stop the looting. Not only that, they don't have enough money after the fact to attempt to regain property that has been looted through lawsuits or attending conferences, getting big public media attention, things like that. A lot of developing nations also have a problem with corruption, so it's fairly easy to bribe a border guard or a customs official to get looted objects out of the country. The market nations, the ones that import most of the cultural property, both legal and illegal, are generally the richest nations in the world. Not coincidentally, the United States is the world's primary consumer of both legitimate and illicit cultural property. The second biggest market nation is the United Kingdom, followed at some distance by Germany and Japan. Because the U.S. is the biggest importer of cultural property, American courts hear a good number of cases involving looted and stolen cultural objects, and the decisions of these courts then have a great impact on the market as a whole. If the U.S. has strong enforcement and strong laws, it will have a huge impact on decreasing the trade. Conversely, weak laws and weak enforcement will lead to a large trade in cultural property, and as you can tell, since it is the third largest illicit trade in the world, it's pretty clear that the U.S. has not been very good in combating the trade. One catch-22 of the U.S. court decisions in many cultural property cases is that often they're based on the enforcement of the country from which the property was looted. A country will increase its chances of success in a U.S. court if it has a strong legal system and enforcement system to combat the trade, but such a country would be a lot more likely to have prevented the looting from occurring in the first place. Meanwhile, the poorest countries that find it very difficult to stop the trade are less likely to succeed in U.S. courts for that specific reason. The courts look at it as, why should it be the U.S.'s responsibility to protect another country's cultural heritage when that country didn't put in much effort itself? So that was just a brief look at the illicit trade of cultural property as it stands today. And you can see some of the problems faced by both source nations and market nations, and I'll be discussing specific laws and specific cases in upcoming episodes. The sources I used for this podcast included the Art Crimes Facts website, which is at www.artcrime.info, in case you want to take a look at it, as well as a law review article by Sue Park, which appeared in the winter 2002 edition of the University of Pennsylvania Journal of International Economic Law. Well, that's it for today's episode of the Cultural Property Law Podcast. This is Nick Dietz, and I hope you'll join me next time.